My name's Nigel Farmer, and I've lived in Maldon for nearly 25 years. And back in the early 90s, I started the Maldon Brewing Company, which is also known as Farmer's Ales. And I've been a home brewer all my life. Started when I was about 16 or 17 at home, and I used to do kits from Boots, and it was so bad that my father used to have to put light ale, kind of light ale, into his beer to make it palatable. But I've progressed since then, and I ended up coming to Maldon in 1993. And I set up my own brewery in my garage, which is no room for the car. It was completely full of brewing kit. And at that time, I was brewing perhaps 9-10 gallons of beer at a time.
Is that for your own consumption?
Yes. Yes. Of course, I didn't sell it to my friends or anybody else I happen to know. But it was my main hobby. And my other main hobby, which I will mention, is Morris dancing. And I've been a member of Bristol Morris Men since I was 23. And as soon as I came to Maldon, I joined the Maldon Green Jackets, who are still going and still putting on a good show. And in those days, a gentleman that danced with me was Jim Titmarsh, a very old friend of mine. And one day we were sitting in a pub, and we were drinking some very mediocre beer, I think from a brewery in Suffolk. And Jim said to me, "Nigel, you can brew better beer than this. Why don't you brew it commercially?" And I said, "Jim, don't be silly." I mean, at that time, I had a very good job at the power station at Bradwell. I was in charge of the engineering computing systems there. And we didn't... It was business computing systems. And I had no plans at the time to finish my job at Bradwell and start a brewery. But Jim was very persistent, and he kept finding me places where I could put this brewery. And we looked at a place on North Street, on the corner of North Street, and that wasn't big enough. We looked at various places in Heybridge, even found me a shipping container at one time. But all these places, there was something wrong with them. They're either too small, not enough footfall, I didn't have power or drainage or anything like that. So I was quite happy. We used to have early morning meetings before work. We used to go to the Crystal Cafe and have breakfast there. And then he came up with the idea of putting a brewery in the back of the Blue Boar Hotel in the old stable block. At that time, the hotel was owned by Old English Inns, private company at the time, and I got on well with the finance director, and we negotiated a deal that I could take over the old stable block. I would repair it and refurbish it and have a rent-free period for that, and all was going swimmingly. Then I had to get planning permission. It took me over 6 months with our dear friends at Maldon District Council to get planning permission through. And almost the day that I got the planning permission, Old English Inns was bought by Green King. And my hopes at the time were dashed that I would ever be able to put a brewery in the back of a Green King pub. Mm. I spent some months trying to find somebody to talk to in Green King and eventually got a refusal out of them. But to my joy, Green King decided that they didn't want to keep the Blue Boar and put it on the market. And that's when it was bought by John Wilsdon, our local, one of our local farmers. So he honoured the original deal that I had with Old English Inns. And so I think it must have been in the 1991 it would have been, we started to refurbish the building. So we stripped it out completely. We put new fascias, new windows, new doors, painted and decorated, and then we put the brewery in.
It doesn't sound a very large building.
It space. Isn't a large building. It's very small. Mm. It's the size of, three living rooms, if you like, or Victorian house living rooms, that sort of size. So it is very small. Originally, I only had two of the three downstairs rooms. The third one was kept by the hotel. And I put in a very small plant. And in brewer's terms, it was 2.5 barrels. Now, a barrel is 36 gallons. So I was brewing just over, say, 100 gallons at a time.
Had you left your job at this time?
No, I hadn't left my job at that time. I was doing this in the evenings and at weekends. But the reason I went into it was because the power station ceased production in 2000, I think around 2000, and went into its decommissioning phase. Mm-hmm. And I somewhat lost heart in my job because I'd spent, a lot of my career keeping this power station going and looking after it, and just to take it to pieces and scrap it didn't appeal to me. The power station at the time, because it was decommissioning, wanted to change its skill set from a set of engineers and staff who wanted to run a power station to those who wanted to decommission one. They introduced a very good voluntary severance scheme, and although I wasn't quite old enough, by the time I was 50, I could apply for it, and they would give me a nice sum of money to basically go away. And it was with that lump sum that I invested in the brewery. And in those days, setting up a brewery was very much a Heath Robinson affair. You bought second-hand kit, you cobbled things together with gaffer tape and bits of string, and basically everybody did that. And there were other brewers who were selling on equipment, and I bought all my equipment second-hand to start with.
Were you the first microbrewery in the area?
Not quite. Just a few months before I started, Mighty Oak moved up from Brentwood into West Station Yard. I remember having a conversation. We went to the Cats for a pint with old Wally. I believe he's still there. And with John Boyce, who's one of the owners of Mighty Oak. And I remember the conversation. He said to me, "Nigel, I don't really want another brewery next to me, but if you do set up, I want you to be the best brewery you can be, because it reflects well on all of us." And I had the same message from Crouch Vale Brewery at South Woodham, who very much sort of my mentors and helped me out, as did Mighty Oak and John Boyce. So, encouraged by that, I invested this money in all this equipment and started brewing in, I think it was November of 2002. Mm-hmm. And my first brew was called Farmers First. And I remember the pump clip, it had a rosette on it, followed quickly by Blue Boar Bitter, because the hotel very kindly offered, although they didn't have any experience of my beer, but they were willing to take a chance on it.
So your beer initially was sold just through the Blue Boar?
No, I really started selling to other free houses in the district. And I remember one of my very early customers was the Station Arms at Southminster with Martin and Maggie, who again were very encouraging and helpful. And even Mighty Oak bought some beer from me. Mm-hmm. I think one of my early invoices was a cask of Farmers First, which Mighty Oak then sold on.
And you did all the brewing yourself?
All the brewing myself at the time. It was a one-man band. Because I was only brewing once a week and brewing, say, these 100 gallons, which is about it's about 12 firkins. Is that right? Two barrels. No, nine firkins. Mm-hmm. Get it right, nine firkins. Firkins are a 9-gallon cask. So
can you explain perhaps the basic routine of brewing?
Yes, you know, I certainly can. You start with a load or charge of malted barley, which is barley that's been germinated, and then the maltster terminates the germination by drying the malt so that the malt contains enzymes ready to change the starch into simple sugars, which is what the barley seed needs to grow. So when it rises with me, it's dried, and as I say, the starch is there, the enzymes are there ready to convert the starch to sugar. Now there are hundreds of different malts, and it all depends on how you dry it. If you dry it at a very low temperature, you get a very pale malt. If you dry it at a very high temperature, you get a dark black malt. One's called chocolate, one's roast malt, black malt, and they're very biscuity. So every malt has a different flavour. And the skill of the brewer is to blend those together to get a good start to the brew. So you start with malt, to which you add hot water, or in the brewing trade we call it liquor. If you're brewing, it's liquor. If you're cleaning, it's water. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you have liquor, which you put into your malt to make a mash. And it's in a vessel called the mash tun. And it looks just like porridge. But it's at a specific temperature, which usually is around about 65 degrees centigrade. Because at that temperature, the enzymes in the malt convert all the starches, 75% of the starches into sugars, simple sugars, which is what the yeast will need to feed on later in the process. And that process takes about an hour, by which time the enzymes are pretty tired. But we kill them off anyway by putting a load more water on a liquor at around about 80 degrees centigrade. That kills the enzymes. And it's like you've seen rotating arms at the sewage works. it's the same thing. We have a rotating arm which sprinkles hot water over the top. And as the water trickles down through the mash, it washes out all the sugars. So you collect that. It's called sweet wort. You take it out and you pump it into the next vessel, which is the copper, or the Americans call them kettles. Basically, that's what it is. It was about 800 litre vessel heated by electricity, three-phase immersion heater, if you like. And when you switch it on, the old electricity meter really takes off. And boil it. You boil it for an hour. And as it comes to the boil, you put in the first charge of hops. And the reason you boil for an hour is that you want to get the acid, the bitterness, out of the hops. But that acid is insoluble in water unless you boil it for an hour, and then it undergoes a chemical change and slowly becomes soluble. So in that hour, that is when we generate the lovely smells that sort of enhance the atmosphere in that part of Malden.
Yes.
And after an hour, we let the wort, which is now hopped wort, let the wort go off the boil. And it's a bit like adding, when you put Earl Grey, you're making a pot of Earl Grey, you put the tea bag in, you get this nice aroma of oil of bergamot. Well, we do the same thing. We put a load of hops in after it's off the boil, and we stir them in, and we get all the hop oils coming out. Because the first charge of hops, which make the bitterness, all the hop oils have been boiled off. So what makes the town smell nice. Mm. So this charge is to get the aroma out of the hops. And that is one of the major differences between our small microbrewing, where we are more concerned about the quality than the cost, and the commercial brewers say, you can't put that amount of hops in, that's far too expensive. So our beers do tend to be a lot hoppier, a lot more full of character than nationally commercial beers. Mm. So, getting back to the process, after we've stirred those in and let them sit for 20 minutes or so, they actually drop to the bottom of the vessel and form a natural filter bed. We then draw off all the hot wort through the hops, so they collect all the what we call trub, which is all the proteins and other bits that come from the malt and the hops. Filter that out, so you get a clear liquid coming out. We then put that through a heat exchanger. We want to cool it down. And it cools down from 85 degrees down to 20 degrees. And in that heat exchange process, we collect hot water, which we then store for a future brew. So when the wort's been cooled down, we pump through the heat exchanger, it gets pumped into a fermenter. And usually my fermenters were about 800 litres. And that's when you put the yeast in.
Right.
Now, when I was home brewing, and I used a dried yeast, but most commercial brewers use a wet yeast, which they've cropped from a previous brew. So we do that. But chicken and egg, where do you get your yeast from to start with? Well, we get ours from Crouch Vale Brewery at South Woodham, and they originally got theirs from Ridley's before it was bought by a certain brewery in Suffolk and closed down. So we put the yeast in and keep it at 20 degrees centigrade for around about 3 to 4 days. Usually it depends on the beer. Stronger beers take longer, but most of the The beer is between 3% and 4% alcohol, take between 3 and 6 days to ferment. And just before the end of the fermentation, when there's still a little bit of sugar left, which the yeast hasn't consumed, we stop the fermentation by cooling the whole vessel down. It's got a water jacket around it. We put chilled water through it, cools it down to 6 degrees, and that stops the yeast being active. And as the yeast goes dormant, it starts to drop to the bottom of the vessel. Mm. So we leave that for 24 hours. Then we draw the beer off what's called the lees, which is the dead yeast, because you don't want it sitting on dead yeast for too long. Draw it off into a conditioning tank where it's treated with sort of finings, because you want to get the beer as clear as possible. Well, that was the style in the days I started. These days, beers without finings are fashionable. But we put auxiliary finings in, which is to take out proteins, and it doesn't settle the yeast as such. It's all to do with electrical charge. But the auxiliary finings take out the proteins. And we leave that in the conditioning tank for 24 hours. And then the following day, we draw that off into the casks. Then we put icing glass in, which is the swim bladders of fish, because that's collagen, which is a wonderful medium for clearing beer, but it's not vegan friendly. So, but it's the best thing to use. And that goes into the cask. Cask is banged up and goes into our store, or went into our store at the brewery, ready for sale.
Complicated process, though, isn't it?
Yes. My goodness. And there are other beers. It's fine when it goes right, but when it goes wrong, and you end up with problems.
So from start to finish, how long?
Well, from starting brewing the beer to drinking it, it depends on the beer. But our best-selling beer, which is called Puck's Folly, I'll say that carefully, it has a sweet spot, which is about 14 days after it's brewed. Oh. It's when it's at its best. So I think it depends slightly on the conditions, but 12 to 15 days, 16 days, that's when Puck's is at its best.
So is that when you bottle it? If you're going to bottle it.
If we're going to bottle it, we bottle it sooner rather than later. Yeah. Yes, you have to leave it in the cask a little while to get some condition, i.e. because in the cask there's still a certain amount of yeast, even though the beer looks fairly clear. There's still something, there's quite a few yeast cells left. So they will slowly ferment and naturally condition the beer, bring the CO2 into the beer, naturally carbonate it.
And how wide an area do you cover in your delivery of beers?
Well, we only have one transit van and we try and keep within Essex.
Right.
These days we have to go further afield because the competition is so great. When I started, I think, as I said, there was only two other breweries in Essex. And that was Mighty Oak and Crouch Vale. And I was the third.
Mm.
Now there are 12, 15 brewers in Essex. And the problem is we're all chasing the same market because the number of pubs has not increased. In fact, number of pubs has decreased, which is a very sad thing. Pubs are closing for various reasons. And also because we are a microbrewery and only a small output, we don't have access to all the pubs owned by the pub owning companies who own 80% of the pubs in the country. So immediately it's a whole swathe of pubs we can't deal with. For many years before I started, the demand exceeded capacity and I was always running out of beer. So very shortly after I set up my 2.5-barrel brewery, I expanded it to a 5-barrel brewery, basically by buying a slightly bigger copper, two bigger fermenters, and my old fermenters became my conditioning tanks. And we had two fermenters and I decided I would call them Tom and Jerry.
And you could fit all that into the stable building?
Yes. Because it's a Grade 2 listed building, you can't change the structure of the building,
right.
Which is a bit of a problem sometimes. But because it was a stable, the doors are actually quite wide. And they're 100, if you take the door off, the door jams were 107 centimetres wide. So when I ordered my vessels, had them made to order, I specified that they had to be 106 and a half centimetres wide and as tall as I could get them to get inside the building. So that's why they were that. That's why the size they are. And so they actually came in at 1,100 litres, something like that. But obviously you have a head at the top of the fermenter for the yeast head to grow in. So you can't fill them right to the top. Otherwise, even when we don't fill them to the top, we still get yeast everywhere sometimes. It comes out and sprays everywhere.
So right from the beginning, you were pretty successful then?
I was tolerably successful, yes. My beers were variable, though. But quite early on, I decided to employ a consultant brewer. His name's Charlie Saville. So Charlie Saville, who was the brewer at Crouchvale, decided that he wanted a more autonomy. So he quit his job as the brewer employed by them and went as a consultant brewer, selling his services to any brewer that would pay for him.
Oh.
And he still does that. So he's a bona fide consultant. And he still works me 2 or 3 days a week and advises, not just some of the brewing, but he advises on brews. He keeps up with the latest trends and techniques, trying to keep our place in the market. So Charlie came to advise and help, which was a great thing. And then I employed a full-time brewer as well, whose name was Fez Powell. And Fez lives in Tenterfield Road.
Yes.
With his wife Sue and a large number of cats. So with that little band, we and myself in running the managing the enterprise, and we carried on like that for several years.
So you were more in the marketing and...
I did more of the marketing, the selling, although I'm not a natural salesman and I hate doing it. I hate selling, but... picking up the phone and talking to people and trying to persuade them my beer's the best. It is, of course. So, yeah, we carried on that stage. But we got to the point then that we needed more fermenters. Yeah. And there was room for two more.
Really?
I had two more bought, made of the same specification. And we called those two Bill and Ben. I mean, we could have called the fermenters 1, 2, 3 and 4, but that's... No, it's in Fermenter 4. No, it's in Bill.
Yeah.
You know, we know which one's which. They've all got their own characteristics.
Yeah.
So we bought two new fermenters. That was about 2010 we did that. And we squeezed them in. And you can just get in between the fermenters. No room to move them around and clean behind them. And it's very difficult. We have to have a major operation to move the fermenters out just 6 inches and then squeeze behind to get, because you've got to keep the place clean.
So that hugely increased your capacity.
It did. And then we hit the next problem, which was we didn't have enough storage space. Our cold room wasn't big enough. So that's when I started looking for a new premises. So this was 2011-ish. Looking around, trying to find somewhere, and not really relishing the thought of moving the whole brewery, because that's a big job, and I didn't feel up to that. So we decided that we would rent a separate space just for a storage area. So in 2012, we rented a part of a barn at South House Farm in Mundon Road from, so I think the name of the owner now, Ben. He actually is a subtenant because his father gave the farm to the National Trust in the 1930s on the strength that it's believed that the Battle of Morden took place just by the farm or in the farm.
So what do you actually store there? Barrels?
Well, we have all our empty casks down there,
yeah.
Which we wash down there, wash our casks, so we have washing facilities. Third of the storage area is taken up with a cold store, which is big enough to drive a forklift into. So we keep our forklift and all our cask beer down there. We also have all our major deliveries down there. So all the malt, which is delivered on a pallet, a ton at a time.
Right.
At the Blue Boar, it was always an issue because we didn't have a forklift. So it had to come off the back of a lorry on a tail lift. And it was a slight slope, and if the tail lift was a bit wonky, we did have on occasions a whole pallet of malt falling off, bags splitting, and
chaos.
And then we had to then shift it all into the malt store, which is the old hayloft from the brewery, from the stable days. So that was a major operation. Now we have it delivered to South House Farm. We have a forklift takes it off, and just sticks it in the car, sticks it in the store, and then we take the malt up to the brewery, six or seven bags at a time, as we need it for the next brew.
Yeah, so that works well.
That works well, except having two sites, it's difficult to manage. Because inevitably you're meant to bring something from one site to the other and you forget. And you've got staff in one place and you really want them in the other place. So it's not ideal and it has caused problems in recent times.
When did you start up your micro pub, Farmer's Yard, in the High
Street? That was in 2015, and this was part a problem caused by the Blue Boar. Because John Wilsdon decided he was going to close his pub for an indeterminate time. Turned out to be 6 to 8 weeks, I think it was. He closed it, he boarded it up. I don't really know why. But he was my biggest customer. And all of a sudden, my biggest customer was not buying beer from me, which caused me a great problem, as you might imagine. Because you can't immediately find customers to replace the amount of beer that the Blue Boar was buying. So that prompted us to think, well, looking to the future, perhaps we better have our own showcase. And I'd been into a pub in Deal in Kent called the Just Reproach and talked to the owner there about the way micropubs run. And I was very impressed. I loved the place. I mean, I discovered it by chance when we were on holiday down there. And we spent nearly every day we went to the Just Reproach and had a pint or two of some excellent beer. So I love the idea. And the principle behind a micro pub is that it is small. It encourages conversation. It has real ale predominantly. It has other things as well. And it's run by one person. So it's quite an efficient business model. We don't quite stick to that at the Farmer's Yard because I didn't want to run it full time, neither did my son, because he's managing the brewery now. So we do actually have a manager, Annie James Fraser from Mill Road. That's what I'm looking for, Mill Road. And she manages it for us, and we have one other part-time regular member of staff.
It's very small, isn't it?
It is very small.
And it doesn't pay for itself, presumably.
The economics are very, very lean, shall we say. And we've recently had to close on a Monday because we were just making a loss every Monday. Because we can only seat 12 people. And you can get perhaps 8 or 9 standing. So if you get more than 20 people in there, it's full. Yeah. That's fine on a Friday and Saturday night, but on a Tuesday lunchtime, no. So we don't open on Tuesday till 5 o'clock now. Trying to make sure we're open when the customers want us to be open and they're likely to use it.
Yeah.
And that has improved the viability of it. But it is, like any pub, it is very difficult. They require the landlord to put the rent up, and we've got a problem.
So you're back now selling through the Blue Boar?
Yeah, well, Mr. Wilsdon tried to sell the pub. And he sold it to Shepherd Neame, but that didn't come about. And eventually he sold it to his daughter, Kate Wilsdon. And she's taken it over. And they do have our beer now. And we do a special beer for them called Hair of the Hog. It's the name that they chose. It's available exclusively at the Blue Boar.
Right. So, and what, Nigel, what are your plans for the future?
Well, we realise that this building is no longer fits our needs. We need to expand, not necessarily to produce more beer, but we need to produce beer in different packaging. So we need to think about canning and kegging, which we just don't have the space for. So we need somewhere that's got the space. And also we need to improve our cooling systems. And all that leads to suggest we need a new brewery. Now, I have been looking for 3-4 years now for a suitable site. And I tried first at South House Farm, where we already had our cold store. And Ben Lane was very keen for us to take over some more of the barn that we were in. But because it's owned by the National Trust, they were not keen and they would not allow it. So that was the first one. We then talked to the binders, Crispin Binder and Pete Binder at Bramble Hall Farm. And we decided that that would be a good place to have a brewery. We got on well with the binders. We've got connections with Morton Rugby Club. And we originally were going to take over their barn. But the barn is situated, if you like, at the back of the farm, and there's a long track to get up to it. And Crispin said to me, you know, you can take over my barn and you probably will get change of use permission for it. But if you do that, I'm going to build another barn anyway to put my equipment in. Be a smaller barn, but I could do that. So why don't you just have the new barn to start with? Now, that makes logic to you and I.
Mm.
But to a planning officer, no. No, because it was a rural area, it was a greenfield site, wouldn't allow it.
Mm.
We had situated it back behind, there's a small commercial area on the corner where the track to Bramble Hall Farm goes. And we put it back there, shielded by trees. But you know, one of the complaints was, objections was that it would spoil the street scene.
Mm.
So we realised that was a non-starter. So I tried various other places, talked to people in Burnham, I talked to Beckenham Farm. They had buildings. None of them were big enough or suitable enough, or the cost of conversion was so great. And then out of the blue, I got a call from Richard Eamons, who runs the Morden Oyster Company, up at Cock Clark's. He has what used to be a farm, Birchwood Farm, which is now where Morden Oysters is situated, and several other businesses. And he called me up and said, "Nice, I've got a building I think I might do for your brewery." So I went up to see him. I've known him for years because back in 2006-07, I think, I started brewing Morden Oyster Stout, which has three dozen Morden oysters in it. Well, I like to be accurate in my descriptions.
Yeah.
So I've known him since then. And in the early days when we had oyster festivals in Morden, I used to work with him. He used to provide the oysters and I used to provide the oyster stout. So I went up to look at this building, but it wasn't big enough. And I was saying, you know, we need a building for, I think it was 4,000 square feet approximately. And he said, "Well, I haven't got anything like that, but I do have this bit of derelict land on the corner of the farm." And he said, "We could put a brewery there." And so that was the original suggestion. And I thought, this is possible. He offered to fund the building and I would rent it from him. So we thought that would be a good plan. And because it's already an industrial site, we thought there wouldn't be a problem with the planning application. No. The planning officer didn't like it because it was supposed to be greenfield. It wasn't greenfield, it was a bit of scrubland on the corner. A lot of people in Cock Clark's objected, and they still do object, to putting a building up in this piece of land. And the main objection was that it wasn't a designated employment site. There are 12 or 15 of them in the district, and you're supposed to put all your industrial development into those. So though it was an industrial site, it wasn't designated. So the planning officer, very late in the day, we found out, had proposed that we be rejected. And this is after we've done the environmental survey, the tree survey, the traffic survey, the noise survey, the pollution survey, the drainage.
We covered everything.
Yeah. Eamon spent a lot of money producing those, which is fine. But we learnt perhaps 10 days before the planning hearing that it was going to be rejected. So we lobbied our councillors, that's all you can do. And fortunately for us, two of the councillors, that's Sue White, who was the councillor for that ward, and Henry Bass, saw the merit of the plan and spoke very eloquent in favour of it, and they persuaded 5 of the 8 on the committee to vote
for
it.
So we got through
in the end,
though
we weren't expecting it. So we're currently at the stage where we have this greenfield site, and we're now trying to raise the finance for it, which is proving to be a problem. We were hoping to get a rural development grant, but for various reasons, they stop in March. So I'm down by about 40,000, which has severely restricted our plans.
So watch this space.
Watch this space.
You mentioned brewing different flavours of beer, types of beer. You brew a lot for sort of special occasions in the town, don't you? Such as the pantomime and...
Yes, if we can.
And drama.
Well... Yeah, strictly, they are existing beers that we rebadge.
Right.
If it's a one-off. But if somebody comes to me and says, we're doing like an Oyster Festival,
yes.
or we're doing the Smoke and Fire Festival,
yeah.
There's a possibility of selling ideally a whole brew's worth, then we will brew a special beer for that occasion.
Mm. How do you vary the flavours?
It's the choice of the malts and the choice of the hops.
Yeah.
And you can... Basically, put the beers into two categories. There's the darker, maltier beers, where you pay a lot of attention to balancing the flavours of the malts, and you use the hops just to get the bitterness in, and perhaps a little bit of aroma, but you really want the malty notes to come out, the sweetness or the biscuitiness of the darker malts. That's one set of beers. And then on the other side are the golden beers, which are very light in colour, and you use a very simple malt. It's called extra pale. It doesn't have a lot of flavour its own, but so all the flavour comes from the hops. And then you carefully choose the hops you're going to use and the quantity you're going to use to get the aromas. And if you get it right, you get very nice citrus tones or citrus notes, hints of orange and hints of lemon or grapefruit, some people say. I even had rhubarb once, though. I couldn't go that far. I don't know where the rhubarb came from. But so the two types of beer, basically. And the golden beers are very popular. So
you are very involved in community affairs, aren't you?
I try to be. I think that's important. Yeah. I like to be a part of the member of the community, and being in the high street has helped that greatly. Yeah. In the days we had a town centre manager, when I wasn't using the office full time, I let him have the office 2 or 3 days a week, so he could do his work. Mm. Unfortunately, we don't have one now. He was done away with. he was very redundant. Yes.
And now your son is running the brewery.
Yes, he is.
You're retiring?
I have officially retired. I got to the age of 65 this year, and I decided that it was getting a bit too much, the effort of... Mm. It's a very physical job. Mm. A cask weighs 55 kilograms, and you've got to lift those, even into a van. It's a young man's job.
So now you're a bit more of a consultant.
I am a consultant, yes.
And a taster.
Yes, I do a bit of tasting now and again. Yes, down at the yard particularly.
Lovely. Thanks, Nigel.